This interview is made possible by the View Conference, the biggest computer graphics conference in Italy. Our dates for 2022 are from the 16th to the 21st of October. We hope to see you in Italy or online. For more information about View Conference, please visit our website, viewconference.it. Hi, everybody. Rona Liu is the production designer on Turning Red, the latest Pixar hit. So before we start talking about the movie, I just wanted to ease into the whole interview by asking you, why did you decide to pursue a career in animation?
Why animation? I feel like I've been so in love with animation just my whole entire life. I remember being a little girl and sitting on the couch and freezing The Little Mermaid at every frame and drawing it, drawing Ariel. Like every summer it was a different Disney movie. So it was like The Little Mermaid, then it was Sleeping Beauty, then it was Beauty and the Beast. And I just loved all of the characters. I wanted to live in those worlds. And that's where it all began.
Let's go.
I'm Aileen Lee. I wear what I want, say what I want, 24/7, 365. I know, it's a lot. But I don't got time to mess around. All about the hustle, am I right? Poor town. This is going to be the best year ever. And nothing's going to get in my way.
May May, breakfast is ready.
Coming.
It's gonna be me.
Is everything okay?
I'm a gross red monster. Look at me. Stay back.
This happened already?
What did you say?
Our ancestors had a mystical connection with red pandas.
Are you kidding me?
This little quirk runs in our family. You're so cute.
Sick. I've always wanted a tail.
I'm a freak.
We love you, May.
You're our girl.
Whoa. You're you.
Any strong emotion.
Yes.
Will release the panda.
Abby, hit me.
Do you know how dangerous this is? You'll get whipped up into a frenzy and panda all over.
OMG! My whole life I've been perfect little May May. But maybe I like this new me.
Mama's girl.
Stop!
So the movie is really beautiful visually. I think it's just a masterpiece visually. It's so rich and just gorgeous. Walk me through the visual style, how you develop that special look and feel.
The place that we started from was kind of our own background and the things that we really loved when we were 13-year-olds. So a lot of things that are like cute, like Sanrio, Sailor Moon, like animes that we would watch, toys that we would play with, like cute little notebooks that we would have. And a lot of, you know, the Sailor Moon color palette was this beautiful wash of pastel. And that was the place that we really wanted to start with. And, you know, this is a movie about a 13-year-old girl, and so everything has to be designed through her lens. And she is young and fresh and vibrant and spunky. And so all of our color design and all of the vibe of the film has to look and feel like it's her story. And so that's kind of always our North Star, which was how May would see the world that she is in. And so much of our color palette, you know, actually originally there was a moment where we looked at Toronto and we're like, oh, Toronto in the fall is so beautiful with these like beautiful golden ginkgo leaves. And it's the city is just a wash of golden yellow. And we were like, we should do that. And I remember Domi loving it at first. And then she comes back and she was like, Rona, like this is our like young coming of age story about a girl. Maybe we shouldn't put it in fall. We should put it in the spring when like everything's a brand new beginning. And we were like, oh, that's a really great idea too. And so we swapped the whole color palette. Instead of ginkgo leaves in the fall, it would be cherry blossoms in the spring. And so everything even fit in that like pastel pink, like baby blue sky even more.
So can you tell me a little bit about the sources that inspired you for the style, for the particular aesthetic, whether they're movies or works of art?
We looked at a lot of, you know, for the color palette, it was a lot of, you know, old anime. But then once we got into production, we started looking at a lot of pastel photography to inform us how light actually works and what type of like adjustments we need to make in comp. So I would say there was a lot of that. And for the world building, you know, we couldn't actually go to Toronto. So we were, a lot of us were just constantly on Google Maps and, you know, we would plop ourselves in the middle of the street and just look around. And, you know, in Chinatown, we noticed a lot of these like pointy cat ear roofs. We call them cat ear roofs, but they were just very distinctive types of architecture in Toronto that we wanted to capture. And like Chinatown differed from Midtown, and it differed from the sky rises. And so it was really important for us to do our research and to research into the real world. And so that, you know, in our imaginary fantastical version of Toronto, even though it's chunk, we call them chunkified and it's cutified, that it would still capture the spirit of what Toronto looks like.
Yeah. And so maybe you can elaborate more on precisely on this point, on the juxtaposition between the modern Toronto and the ancient China of Chinatown.
Yeah, in our research, we found that, you know, Chinatown tends to be a lot older, like you said. You know, it's like the buildings are a lot older. It's almost kind of this like the actual Toronto Chinatown has this like pattern to it in terms of like material and color. Like it's like bricks and then like wood, and things might be a little run down, and things are kind of this like patchwork pattern to the look of Chinatown. And we thought that was really important to capture the kind of age of that and contrast it to the more modern, like where Daisy Mart is, that's kind of like slightly more commercial area, and school, and then, you know, the Sky Dome. So then you have the old versus the new. In Chinatown, you have more of those like pointed, the cat ear roofs. And then in Midtown and Sky Rises, it's more flat roof. And then even color palette, we're moving from Chinatown's more bricky. So it's more salmon-y color, move to a more ochre, that's Midtown. And then like cool cement, and that's the near the Sky Dome and the CN Tower. And so when Panda May runs through the city, you get this like subconscious like transition of color, progression of color as she runs from school back home, and you go from cool to warm.
And then you do again the same progression when she's running to the concert, right?
Correct. We move from a lot of like warm light that is in the Chinatown, and then we slowly move into the more cool lights.
Do you want to say anything about the green color that together with the pink and pastel that it's used a lot?
Yeah, one of our goals in the film was to make sure that even though we had a very vibrant color palette, like everything's very saturated, that we had a limited color palette. And so, you know, each scene is not, it's not like a rainbow color. It's actually, if you look closely, it's kind of like we limit it to like 3 or 4 colors per scene. And this way the character is always popping forward. And so when May, you know, she's of the red color palette, whether she's a human or the red panda. And so, for example, we really wanted to contrast her with green. So Ming is green because like Ming, our backstory was Ming had designed May's bedroom as a kid. And so she filled it with her own color palette. And this way, when May is in her room, she's really kind of in mom's environment. And so the room is all green and things like that. And then, you know, Miriam is also green. So for us, it kind of symbolizes this tug between, you know, mom and best friend, the two opposing world. Like, who does she choose? Who is she loyal to? Like herself or, you know, her goody self. And so, you know, they're a little bit different. Ming's an emerald green. Miriam is this kind of ochre yellow green, but they're both green.
At the beginning of the movie, we see a red flower in May's hair, and we see exactly the same shaped and red flower during the ritual. What does that flower represent?
When we were designing her hairpiece, when she was a little girl, a lot of it actually came from like us as little kids, because we were looking back at our own family photo albums. And we were trying to design little May to be like mom's good girl, mom's perfect little girl, mom's mini me. And a little flower just seemed like such a symbol for like this like perfect little girl that like mom has created, that she wants to be just like mom. And, you know, when she goes into the ritual, she brings it back again because she's really trying to be mom's dutiful baby girl. She's trying to do what she thinks is the right thing, the thing that would please her mother. And so I guess it really just symbolizes like that, like pure obedience, I guess.
The red panda is hugely important to the movie. How did you explore the appearance, the size, and how she interacted with the world? Just tell me more about bringing to life this panda.
With the red panda, our kind of main objective was to create this character that is very cute. She's very cuddly, and she's just unexpectedly wild. And, you know, this character starts out being extremely uncomfortable in her own skin. You know, she's messy. She's like the antithesis of May, this girl who's spent her whole life trying to be perfect. And so, you know, in terms of the cute, you know, we wanted to make her big head to body proportion. She's got to be extremely round, but she's also have to be very messy. And so for her fur, we looked at, you know, alpaca fur, because it's very soft, it's very curly, it's very fuzzy, and yet it's also matted. It could, you know, sometimes it has stuff stuck to it because it's not always like brushed out, it's not very clean. And so it's kind of this like juxtaposition of like cute but messy. And for her size, she's had to bump into everything in the beginning, where we were still in these like pre-visualization moments. We kind of had her, we put her into this like just a quick model of the home, and we made sure that her head can barely fit through the doorway, that when she stands up, you know, she can't stand up all the way without her head awkwardly grazing the ceiling. And so everything was, the whole entire environment was designed to the size of her body to make sure that she fits, but just awkwardly, so that when you see her on screen, you subconsciously get this feeling of she doesn't quite belong inside the house. And so now when she's, you know, outside into the world, you get the sense that, oh, she's free, and she's this wild creature that doesn't doesn't belong in the house. She's not meant to be held back.
Did you adjust the look of each panda to resemble their alter ego? And what kind of features did you give Mei and Ming?
Absolutely. Mei's, if you put her face to the panda's face, they actually proportion-wise somewhat match up. And that's kind of what we did. We made sure that proportionally, you know, her eye to nose distance, even though she's now a panda, that there would be some, like, there would be, like, it would still be her face. And for Ming, she has, you know, her giant sweep of her hair. And we actually gave her like gentle eyeliners to the giant Mingzilla. And she has her iconic mole when she's a human being. And she has a little patch of fur when she's a giant beast. And and her muzzle, you know, it's a little pointed. So everything was kind of subtly molded to Ming. And, you know, when we get into the grandma and the aunties, you know, it's the same. We made sure that the character is always next to the panda and adjusted accordingly so that you definitely feel the resemblance, even though it's not a perfect one-to-one.
Tell me a little bit more about the character design. Tell me a little bit about the girls.
Abby is Lavender. She's, for her design, it was all about, she's cute and round and short. She is the girl that you wouldn't expect to be such a fireball and to have so much attitude. And so her is this Lavender. She has a rolly backpack. She has these like floral embroidery patches on her overall, and she's covered in glitter. She has glitter eyeshadow. She has a glittery headband and glittery earrings. So she's all about like the cute and the unexpected. Priya is this more muted ochre yellow because she's super deadpan. For us, we designed her with an Indian background. So she, you know, she's the golden color is kind of her palette, go-to palette. And she's deadpan. She has like dark eyeliners because she's a little bit gothic. She loves her vampire novels. And that's kind of, and then Miriam, she's a skater girl. She always carries her skateboard around with her. She's very sporty. She has like that kind of 90s flannel jacket. And then the beanie hat, and yeah, she's the tomboy and kind of she's Mei's best friend.
I was really fascinated by the look and just the sequence of the bamboo forest. How did you create that beautiful sacred space?
The idea of a bamboo forest kind of came from the fact that Mei Panda, she's a panda and their natural habitat is a bamboo forest. And as much like the more we thought about it, it's, you know, we love movies like Hero and House of Flying Daggers. And there's such a sereneness to the bamboo forest and such a, if you do it right, they can become this like beautiful minimalistic backdrop where all of the bamboo leaves and the bamboo stalks kind of just fade into a graphic background. And then it can really make the red of the red panda pop. And I think that was our goal, that our eyes are always on the main characters. And then everything kind of just fade into this like beautiful dreamy haze. And, you know, when you enter the astral plane, there's this like wave of bamboo leaves that actually guide Mei to the clearing where the portal is. And that idea we were looking at, there's this video game called Ghost of Tsushima, and there's this like wind that guides the main character. And so we took kind of inspiration from like, oh, we like this from this, and we like this from this, and all of these things kind of feel right. And for us, we then melded together to make something unique to us.
Tell me more about what that sequence means to you and what message you were delivering.
The astral plane sequence was really kind of a spiritual ground, and like it's this place where it's weirdly devoid of emotions, but like when you're there, so much emotional things happen, and like May has to make that really tough choice for herself, whether she stays true to herself and whether she follows her ancestors' footsteps and abandon kind of her wild self. I think one thing, I'm not sure if this answers your question, but one thing that like really spoke to me was, you know, Sunny, when she first appears, you know, she's so calm, but her face is just kind of blank. And it's kind of like the choice is yours. But at the very end, when May chose the path that she had chosen, she kind of has this hint of a smile. I mean, I guess the message is that when you stay true to yourself, I guess the whole world opens up to you.
Representation is important. Why do you think it matters to represent women in as protagonists?
There's just so many untold stories, and I feel like there's just so many stories worth telling that haven't been told. And I love that this, you know, I was just thinking about this weekend, that so many times, even when we do have women protagonists, it's partnered with a man who teaches her how to come to her, I guess, truer self. And although there's nothing wrong with, you know, a male-female tag team, I just feel like, but there are also stories where it's women supporting women. And I would love to see more of that, because that was true to my experience growing up. There, you know, I grew up, my mom's a single mom and my best friend is a girl. There was just women supporting women the way I grew up. And like my mom was my dad and my mom, and my best friend, she was like a girly girl and she's a tomboy. And I feel like women can be so much that sometimes like these stories deserve to be told, and these our stories deserve to be represented.
I mean, are you surprised that the audience would respond so positively?
Surprised and not surprised. I mean, there's always like, while making it, we're like, we love this. We think this is amazing. We think this is so fresh. This is going to be a hit. And then once it comes out, you're like, it's going to be a hit, right? And then, so it's always this like, we believe in it, but can others see what we see? And so it's this like, yes, and yes. And now that it's like a yes and a yes, it's definitely a pleasant surprise. And yeah, not surprised, but also very relieved that it is the way it is, because it deserves it.
Before we conclude, I want to ask you to leave us with a few words of wisdom for young filmmakers out there who dream of becoming production designers or animators. Just what would you say to them?
I would say work hard, you know, leave nothing to chance, you know, do your best. You know, it's, yeah, you got to make the best portfolio. You got to just put your best work in, put your best face forward. And then, you know, and then when you ever face rejections, because you will, we all face rejections, to just let it pass and just keep moving forward. Career paths are not linear. You don't know what's going to happen to you the next day, the next year. And so don't give up, just keep working hard. And you got to do that.